Welcome to Know the Name, Know the Answers. I want to make sure I got the right word out there. My head was everywhere because I am so excited to have Dr. Gregory Williams with us today. This is your host, Sharon Lynn Wyeth, and my guest today is Dr. Gregory Williams, who I met about a year ago. And he is on the administrative leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine's OBGYN department, which is located in Texas's Children's Hospital in the heart of the Texas Medical Center in Houston, Texas. Now, he has a PhD in counseling and is a well-known speaker and teacher. He's authored Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together Again After Child Abuse. And I will tell you, it is a heart-wrenching book. You just need to have your box of Kleenexes ready because even the coldest hearted person out there is going to have their heart moved. And for all of us normal people, you start with a Kleenex box right away, and you might want to have two boxes just to make sure that you can get through the book. It's very uplifting at the same time, even as you're experiencing the heartache of it. And currently, Dr. Gregory Williams travels the country speaking to thousands of people about child abuse, the aftermath of abuse, the detection and recognition of abuse, and the importance of adverse childhood experiences, and how those experiences that we have as a child can affect us all the way through into adulthood, and you never know when it's going to come up and come through and just kind of like cause a shadow in your life. Now, Dr. Gregory Williams has been featured on Fox News, ABC News, and so many radio shows and podcasts around the world. He's the head of the Baylor College of Medicine's pilot program, which is in conjunction with Emory College and the University of San Diego Medical School. And they're developing a curriculum for medical schools to incorporate training at the residency and fellowship leader on, troubled, traumatic childhood experiences and how to recognize them, how to see them, what to do about it, what advice to give, what suggestions to give. So I am just absolutely thrilled to have Gregory on our show tonight. So, Gregory, welcome to Know the Name, Know the Answers.
Hey, Sharon, it is an honor to be with you tonight, and I'm looking forward to a wonderful show, and I hope we get some call-ins too later on. This is going to be great hour.
I think so. And speaking of call-ins, the call-in number is 888-627-6008. Again, 888-627-6008. Also, you can call in at 323-744-4831. Again, 323-744-4831. As always, you can email me at the same time. I'm monitoring the emails. That is at info, short for information, at knowthename.com. So info at knowthename.com. If you just want to ask a question via email instead of calling in, we'd love to hear from you though. So to start, and I don't know how much of this you're comfortable sharing. I think your book does a tremendous job of it. But what is it that you had to live through, and so that, and how did you get through it to come out this other end to be the most compassionate person in helping others also live through child abuse?
Well, that is a large question. I'll try not to take the whole hour to answer that one, but I tell you what, for the first 17 years of my life, it was almost to my 17th birthday when my dad finally stopped after I, for the first time in all those years, I fought back. And he stopped the daily abuse. And I think the physical abuse and the sexual abuse was so horrific for me to handle, especially when you're a teenager. But the aftermath was devastating, even more so emotionally. And I think even inside my body, as I went through my college years, I went through my first marriage, you start having children. And then everything around me emotionally inside started to fall apart. I was literally in my mid-40s looking like I was going to die. And I finally had to come to grips of what was going on after open heart surgery, which there's no reason why I should have had open heart surgery, just a valve just went bad. And I ended up having to deal with the truth that I had tried to bury and put in the closet and throw away the key. But it kept coming back to me. It was affecting my sleep. It was affecting my emotions, my anger, my rage, my stability. Even though I told the world I was doing great and I was the happiest guy at the office, at night I was miserable. And it finally just broke through and it came out very ugly. And if it wasn't for my faith, if it wasn't for my Lord and Savior, I would have never made that. That has been my one and only foundational pillar that never wavered on me.
So your abuse was, in essence, even though you say it was physical and sexual, it was really emotional also.
Well, it was. And, you know, if a person that's listening has been through anything, well, it doesn't have to be a daily abuse, just one time, you know, the violation. I think in my younger years, 4, 5, and 6, I thought everybody went through this. I thought it was normal, but I went through at my 12 and 13 year old area, when I went through a gang rape, several different times with my dad and some of his friends, three or four times during two different summers, that started to weigh heavy on me. And then when I became 15, 16 years old, and I had a girlfriend, and I would be out on a date with the girlfriend and be driving home, I knew just as soon as I walked in the door, within 15 minutes, I was kissing my girlfriend good night. 15 minutes later, I'd be kissing my father. At 16 years old, that's hard to deal with. And that literally got up into my attic, in my brain, and kicked out some shingles. And it really messed me up. At that point, when I was 16, my dad forced me to sleep with him every night. Mom was gone Monday through Friday. So Monday through Friday, every week, I was sleeping in the same bed with my father. I could never take a shower alone. He never did either. And when I was, you know, walking through the house or cooking dinner or going to get a soda or whatever, he would come up and grab me and do, it was literally like I was my dad's play toy all the time during the evenings when we were home alone. And that really messed me up. And I still have nightmares about that. It's terrible.
So it makes it hard to sleep.
Oh, I don't sleep. I do power naps. I don't try to sleep more than an hour and a half, 2 hours at a time. And I sleep in a chair. So after about an hour and a half, I'll get up. I go to sleep around 12, 1230. I'll get up and I'll walk around after about an hour and a half. And then I'll try to get one more of those power naps in. And by 3 o'clock, I'm up taking a shower, getting ready to go to work. And I get to work around 3:30. That's all the sleep I get. Go ahead.
Well, how has this affected your children? Because as you start writing the book, you were sending them a chapter at a time. Yeah. How has that affected your relationship with your children? And were you overly sensitive as a overly protective dad because of it too?
Great questions. And I tell you, Sharon, I've done hundreds of interviews and you always ask fascinating questions that I never get from anybody else. So I appreciate your in-depthness and your thoughtfulness. I really do. My kids, of course, we went through a divorce when my kids were young. They were probably 9, 10, 11 in that area, which is a tough area, time to have a divorce for kids. Of course, it's always tough for a child. But just now, after the book came out, and as I was sending them chapter by chapter, they started understanding what was going on with me and the way I was. I would never let Dad be in the same room with them. I was overly protective to a crazy state in that world. Not with everybody, but with my father, I was. And so it affected them with my relationship. I don't think I showed them the quite affection that a father probably ought to. And I think I was afraid that I didn't want to hurt them, even though I never even had those thoughts. But it was like, I'll hug you, but I'm not going to hug you for very long type thing. And I don't think I've ever told them that, but it did run through my mind. I want to make sure there was no even shred of thought in their mind, what's Dad hugging me so tight for? But just now, I'm talking within the last year since the book came out, we have a whole different relationship I do with each of my children, and we're closer than we've ever been. And telling the world and them every secret helped that relationship to just flourish.
Well, and then they can get a better understanding too of why you were very protective of them. It would make more sense to them.
Yes, and of course, in the divorce game, there's always the man's story, the woman's story, and then the real story. So we didn't. I tried not to blame the divorce on anyone. It just happened. But I think, it's hard to have a relationship with me. Just in the last year or two, I've been able to have real friendships. I wasn't like this a year or two ago. I was very offstandish. I pretended to talk and enjoy, but I would not let you get too close to me.
That's the sign of a real healing, is when you're able to be willing to take a risk again, that you can have a relationship and that person's got good intents and doesn't, it will not on purpose hurt you.
Yeah, and Sharon, it would be that I would sit and talk about you and your life and your problems and your every situation that you were in, and I would help you and do anything in the world for you and really care and love you as a friend. But when you started, if you would start asking me questions, I would automatically go, "Oh, I got to go. I got a meeting." Or I'd have a reason to shut down that part of the conversation. I didn't want anybody in my life. I put a wall up, and it was almost in my mind. It wasn't almost, it was exactly like this. I thought in my mind, if you got too close to me, you're going to screw me over like everybody else that's got close to me has. And I just knew you would, so I wouldn't let you get close to me. And now I'm a complete different person. And I feel so free and happier than I've ever been in my life.
We have an email from a boy who says he wants to use a fictitious name of Charlie. And he's saying that he is 13. His dad says that there's only one bed in the house. They only have a one bedroom apartment, and that's the excuse that he has to sleep with dad. But if he doesn't want to sleep with dad, he's on this couch. And the kid says he's already 6 foot and he has to sleep on this very short couch. And the courts have ruled against his mom knowing anything about him. And so what can he do and able to get out of this situation? Because he says he'd much rather be with his mom, but the courts have ruled that even the schools can't talk to her. So how do we help him?
Well, there's a couple of issues there. And first of all, the fictitious name Charlie, I think, I appreciate you writing in and bearing your soul to us. So I appreciate that. I think at 13, sleeping with your dad, even though whatever the conditions require that, I don't think that's a requirement. I personally think you need to get on the couch. And try not, I mean, there was no indication in this email, am I right, Sharon, that there was anything inappropriate going on, right?
He sent another email and he just said that, yeah, he feels neglected, emotional abandonment.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that is, that's a great topic, a great talking point here is abuse is something that has been actively done to you that's not good for you. Neglect is keeping something from you that would be good for you that you need. And at 13 and 6 foot, you need a place to be able to get rest. And if you can't do that, and it sounds like you're uncomfortable in that bed, I would recommend going to the couch and then asking for a longer couch or something, if that's even possible. But I don't know why mom's not involved, but of course, we can't get involved in discussing with mom. It just seems like that situation is ripe for something to happen that shouldn't even be happening.
Well, and I would suggest, Charlie, thank you again for writing in. And I would suggest you start confiding in your school counselor or a teacher that you trust and let them investigate the situation. And because all teachers and school personnel are forced to, or mandated to, I should say, to report if they suspect any kind of child abuse. And if you're being neglected, it's your teachers that are going to notice first and can do something to help. Okay, so I would start there also and get some suggestions going and get some communication going with somebody that's right there that you can talk with on a regular basis when you feel like you want to. Okay, we have Amy from California.
Wow.
Yeah, Amy, you're online with us. Welcome.
Welcome. Hi, this is really a nice conversation. And I don't know what I want to say, but I'll try to sum it up. And all of my life, I noticed I have been bullied in very subtle ways, like with friends who were heavier than me. And I had a next door neighbor, and she was always, you know, threatening and trying to beat me up, you know, on and off. And then I was in junior high, and I had a guy that was a bully, and he used to bully me where he was going to beat me up after school. And I was just a small person, and I was petrified. And I wouldn't eat in the cafeteria. I got out of school when the bell rang, and I ran so fast home because I was afraid of this person all year long. And I was so grateful that he didn't come back the following year. He was kind of like a hood Fonz, like Happy Days, only he was not a good Fonz.
Right.
And I noticed that in my life where I have authority figures who I feel threatened by. And I go to Dodge City. And I am still noticing that about me, and I'm catching it now. But it's a big fear factor, and it makes me feel victimized in my mind, I realize. And it stops me in life. And then just to add one more punch to it is I've fallen off my bicycle, probably 8 really good slams in my lifetime off my bicycle, a few of them in the last few years. And I am just so sensitive, and I go in circles with my life. And it's crazy. Does this make sense to you?
Well, I think I think bullying is a type of abuse that we overlook in our system. And I would recommend that you, I don't know if you've told anybody or you have written it down, or I highly believe in journaling. I highly believe, okay, there's a couple keys that I really always recommend when somebody says anything about neglect, abuse, bullying, touching inappropriately, date rape, anything that has brought trauma on you, whether you're 3 years old or 33 years old or 93 years old, it doesn't matter. There's a couple things I think you need to do, and one, you've just done that. You've said, I've experienced it. Then the second thing I would do is once you name it, you claim it, and you find as much information out about that topic as you can. And when you do that, you start seeing, and there's so many great things. And if Sharon, if you want to have her get my email address, or I'd be glad to share it here shortly, I'd be glad to email you some wonderful resources. That's free. Everything's free. That would help you deal with that trauma of bullying that comes up when you're 40 years old. You know, it's ironic. Sometimes, and Sharon, you may have seen this in the school systems, that sometimes when a child at, let's say, 13 years old is bullied, when they're 40 years old, they still have a tendency to invite that type of behavior upon them automatically. And it's not like you're inviting it, but it seems like it's attracted to you. Is that the way it is with you, Amy? It's kind of like you feel that people are still bullying you as an adult?
Oh, you know, absolutely. I just learned a great lesson about this last month or two, and I thought, why am I so afraid of this? There's nothing to be afraid of. I need to claim my power. And
yes.
Even yesterday, I was going into a store, and a mother was walking out with her older daughter and her young son. And she just grabbed him and looked him in the face, and she said profanity, right, like slam into his face, yelling at him. And I just got a rock in my gut, and I wanted to go over and say, that is such child abuse, shame on you. But I stopped because, you know, you have to be careful what you do in this world. But I was just aghast at how she was abusing her child. But the whole thing was, it brought up all that energy in me, was, why am I so sensitive? Because in subtle ways, I have dealt with abuse from not even so much, well, parents emotionally in some ways, but not to that extent. But it really pushed my button.
I think once you have been down that road, you recognize it, and you do have your eyes open to a different level than people that have never experienced it. I personally think that I can be in front of a group of people, and I can just make eye contact with them across the crowd, and I can pretty well tell you by looking in their eyes if they've been abused or not. There's an extra sense that has come into a person when you've been down the road with them and experienced it. So I would love to be able to get your email or some kind of contact information from you and be able to send you some resources about bullying and what you need to do. But, you know, claim that, research it. And in the ACEs, the Adverse Childhood Experiences, if you literally type in CDC.gov, that's a government website, CDC.gov, and then when you get in there, type ACEs. It will show you everything that you want to know about ACEs. And ACEs is something that's happened to you as a child, but it affects you as an adult because you never dealt with the core problem. And research that, look at that, and, you know, I'm traveling the country now talking and training people on this because it's an overwhelming phenomenon, but it's scientifically proven fact by physicians around the world. It's just an unbelievable amount of research on that. Sharon, what do you think?
Well, I always look at, there's so many ways of getting healing these days. And Amy, I know that you know, that you have used astrologers and psychics and gifted people all trying to get a handle on this. And I would also like to say that there's some great eye therapy and therapy that can come out and helps, because that's what's helping a lot of our soldiers with PTSD. And I really feel that having gone through any kind of abuse is very similar to going through a war with PTSD. I mean, a war is dangerous because you don't know if you're safe or not. So I don't want to make it that way. But as somebody being abused, you also don't know if you're safe or not.
Right.
You know? And it's another form of PTSD that people can get. And so there's many ways of unlocking that key that's down there at the core. And to me, the numbers of people that are having these experiences are just incomprehensible to me. Gregory, you know what they are. It's what, one out of every four women and, what did you say, one out of every six boys?
Yeah, that's the conservative numbers, and I think it's probably double that. I think it's probably half of the females, and I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't at least around half of all the males. That's my personal opinion. I think it's, the numbers are just out of this world wrong with the statistics of what everybody's talking about.
And it's interesting to me that it's now coming up so predominantly, especially with the Jeffrey Epstein Island becoming more well known to people outside of Florida. And yeah. I think it's important that it's looked at. You know, it almost reminds me of the O.J. Simpson case, where all of a sudden wife abuse really got the front pages, and there was a lot of conference on that, a lot of talk on that, and hopefully it helped to educate people and reduce the abuse in a relationship, in a marriage. But I'm thinking that now, with all of this up, and it's perfect timing to have it come up, and hopefully people get help and get it cleared. I would be curious, Gregory, if you know of any of the statistics or what happens with how many people that are being abused turn into being abusers later.
Oh, it's 93%.
Because one of the things I looked at in the schools was that the kids that were doing the abusing of other kids, I often like to pull them apart and really start talking with them and connecting with them, because my suspicions were, if you're abusing others, that's what you're imitating from what you're happening to you at home.
Yeah, and they're claiming now, and this is another horrific statistic, that if the cycle doesn't get broken, that the average abuser is in a 3-generation cycle. So if I broke it and I didn't abuse my children, my father abused me. So the statistics are saying the chances are high, very high, that his father abused my dad and his father abused him, that there was 3 cycles before it gets broken. So it's not just one generation that's being affected, it's multiple. And if I had 3 brothers, I have 2 brothers and myself, so there's 3 siblings in our family, and if my 2 older brothers were abused too, then it would go, that cycle would continue on. And it's just unbelievable. So what also has helped me, Amy, is that every time I help somebody, like doing this interview, teaching sessions around the country and training workshops or keynote speaking or whatever, every time I get off the stage, I've helped myself one more time and in a deeper degree. So if you can find something that's helped you, be a champion and help somebody else. And in that helping of somebody else, it sure helps me heal my past abuse tremendously by becoming a champion for other people.
So, Amy, I know you're still on the line, at least I'm hoping so. And I would like to say I apologize for all of those people that abused you, that you had to go through any of that. And is there another question you'd like to ask Dr. Williams?
Well, I just wanted to sum up that, you know, in the midst of it all, it has driven me to find healing within myself. So I could probably write volumes and volumes about all the techniques I've studied and learned and classes and education I've incorporated that have helped me deal with it.
Yeah.
But it just seems to never end. It always seems like there's another layer there. There's another layer. And it just said, oh, okay, there's something more I need to learn. But I love to help other people look at things more of a way of healing rather than being in the victim mode. But I haven't quite finished it, so I guess I have more chapters to write.
Well, I do too.
I do too. That there was a spiritual teacher that I was listening to for a while, and I remember her saying, because I asked her, how come there's so much abuse and bullying and neglect and just outright horrible childhoods. You know, when I hear somebody had a really good childhood, I think, wow, lucky for you. Yeah. You know, and I know my parents did the best they could with what they knew. And I always jokingly say that I so appreciate what they taught me. I just didn't always appreciate their modalities. Mm-hmm. But this spiritual teacher said that the reason that there was such a high amount of abuse today is that it forces the soul or the individual to go seeking for a higher authority, to go seeking for healing on all different kinds of levels. And that in actuality, the end result would be that more people would do the healing and find their peace within because of that search. And all I could think of was there's got to be a better way to inspire people to go seeking spirituality or any other solution.
Yeah, you know, Sharon, I'm writing my finishing up my second book that's going to be out maybe early part of next year, called Overcoming the Darkness. And the first sentence in that book goes something like this. And it's a question: could it be that the most horrific pain and abuse that I have experienced throughout my childhood, could it be that that's the very key of what I need to be spending the rest of my life talking about, helping others with? And that's my purpose in life now. So in a way, I can almost, and I'm still not quite there, but I can almost say, God, thank you for allowing me to go through that so I can help people tonight, tomorrow night, and every time I speak. And when you get to that point, you know the healing process is really well underway. And it is there. There's always hope. But I would love to get Amy to jump on my webpage and give me your email information. I would love to keep the conversation going.
So Gregory's webpage is shatteredbythedarkness.com. All right, Amy, what else would you like to say?
Oh, gosh. You know, one other thought, too, if I'm not taking up too much time. Do you have other callers?
Yeah, but that's okay. We're with you.
I was going to say, I really missed the human touch of life today, and I think that's a huge missing element. And I love social media because all three of us and all the listeners can be together in a more remote way, and it is very heartfelt. So I mean that deeply. But on a daily basis, it seems impossible to interact with people just being out and about. Very few people, everyone seems so disconnected, like they're disconnecting from life on all these gadgets. And that that's sad to me, because even now when you say hello to someone, it's kind of like, what do you want? They run from you. They're petrified to have a human interaction with no agenda, but hi, how are you? So that's a tough thing for me right now as well, because I need human contact more, no matter how hard I try to get it. Everybody's too busy. There's social media. And I don't know how you feel about that, but human touch to me is a big missing vitamin in my life.
Well, the children need that, and parents need to know. Put the phone down, get off your computer, and get in the floor and play with your kids. That's going to be one of the damning effects of generations to come. We put them in front of the TV, we put them in front of we throw a Game Boy at them or a cell phone, and we don't communicate even at the dinner table with our children. They need that human touch too, just as badly as, probably even more so, Amy, than us adults. And just think of what effect that's having on them. It's terrible.
Yep, great. I have to go hug street.
What about massages and appropriate touch? Is it harder? Has studies shown that it's harder for people that have been inappropriately touched to trust somebody, even like during a massage?
Oh, don't touch me. No, 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 no. I could never have a massage. No. That would drive me absolutely. I couldn't do it. And I may just be strange in that area. But that would set me off big time. There's a lot of triggers there.
Would it be that getting a massage from someone you did trust, could that help alleviate that within the body that's stored there in the T cells, all those memories?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a whole different ballgame. But for me to go to a massage envy place and have a stranger walk in, I couldn't do that. But yeah, I think I would have to build up that trust. It would take me a while.
Well, may I recommend that you start with Thai massage, because you keep all your clothes on during Thai massage.
Very good. Okay.
That might be helpful.
Are you getting a discount from the local Thai massage parlor? What's the problem here?
I've been trained in Thai massage from Thailand. When I spent so much time over there studying with Japu at night, there was nothing to do during the day. So I put myself through massage school.
Just oh, that's great.
Keep me from getting bored after I'd seen everything I wanted to see. So I was thinking that they say that that's a lazy man's yoga, and it might be a way of touching without you know, because they're moving your body into different yoga positions or whatever.
Right.
It might be a way of helping to break some of that, you know.
Yeah, it could be. I touch is very strange to me, so I have issues with that, but yeah. Some people may not. But that's just me. That's my personal thing.
Well, Amy, any last words before we go on to the other person, other people?
Just one thing I want to say is try a float tank. Those float tanks they're loaded with health benefits, but nobody touches you, and you're floating on a big thing of water. You should go try that.
I've heard about those. There's one right around the corner. Yeah.
They're loaded with magnesium, too, I believe. So you get a healthy dose of magnesium, but you aren't being touched, and you might have a really neat experience. But, hey, I'm going to let you guys go so you can take other callers. Thank you so much. What a wonderful call.
Yeah, Amy,
call.
Please reach out to me, will you? I'd love to continue the conversation.
I'll be glad to pass her information along.
Absolutely.
Okay. So
we will be in touch.
We need to break very quickly for our short minute and a half commercial break. We will be right back to Know the Name, Know the Answer. Stay tuned.
How would you like to be able to read other people's minds? Well, the next best thing is here. When you know how to read a person's name, you know how the person thinks, feels, and behaves. Each letter in our name holds a key to unlock our true essence. Our name contains both our gifts and challenges in this lifetime. Nemology science discovers personality secrets hidden in the placement of the letters of our names, including the first and last impression people remember about us. Sharon shows us how to interpret the arrangement of letters as outlined in her book, Know the Name, Know the Person. Sharon Lynn Wyeth created Nemology Science after 18 years of research and testing her theories and has supported thousands of people around the world in understanding themselves and others better. You'll enjoy Sharon's unique teachings as she shares her system to learn the gifts behind your given birth name. Even if you don't like your birth name, there are jewels in this book. If you're thinking of changing your name, ready to name your child, or wanting to get along better with others, this is the book for you. If you'd like to improve your relationships and change your life for the better, get the book today, Know the Name, Know the Person, or visit www.knowthename.com. That's www.knowthename.com.
Welcome back. This is Sharon Lynn Wyeth, your host for Know the Name, Know the Answers. My guest tonight is Dr. Gregory Williams. He is really an expert on child abuse, having been there himself, becoming a counselor. So Dr. Williams has become the expert here on child abuse, if such a thing can be called an expert on this. He's written a book, Shattered by the Darkness. It is a fabulously written book. It is better than any soap opera on TV or anything that they could make up. It's amazing how it draws you in. And definitely before you start, I'm going to say, get your Kleenex boxes ready. It is really a tearjerker. And however, there's a nice light at the end of the tunnel. And so Dr. Gregory Williams is here with us tonight, taking your questions. Again, the call-in number is 888-627-6008. And Virginia, thank you for your patience and you're on air with us. How can we help you?
Yes, my question is, why are people that are abused end up being attracted to the abuser? In the sense, like my son, his father was very abusive to him. I don't know how, but I know it was very emotional, but anyway, he ended up taking care of him with his advanced Parkinson's for about 3 or 4 years until he died. And I've noticed that with other people, that they've been abused, and yet they'll end up taking care of that parent. Mm. And I'd would like to understand that. And what happened with him, he called me up one day and said he was going to quit talking to me because he got too dependent on me, which he didn't. But it was 7 years ago, and he hadn't spoken to me since. And then he ended up taking care of his abusive father, and it's very strange. I would like to see if I could understand that. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Virginia, for the honest question. I remember when I was almost 17 years old, the little story real quick that may help shed some light. I was almost 17 years old. It was almost my 17th birthday. And my dad came in to my room. I just got home from a date with my girlfriend. And he said, son, you ready? Because at that point, you know, he just told me when he was ready. And he started in abusing me, taking off his clothes and doing his deal with me. I immediately pushed back. For the first time in my life, I pushed back and fought. And he stood up and looked at me and gave me this little grin and then grabbed me by the arms and pushed me back and pinned me even harder to the bed and went in even more aggressive. And I almost did the limp dish rag, which was my normal game. I just laid there like, hurry up. But something raged inside of me, and I pushed him back even harder, where he almost fell down. And I pointed it at him and screamed to the highest scream I could scream, I swear to God, if you don't leave me alone, I will tell the whole world what you're doing to me. At that point, he stood up straight and looked at me straight in the eye and gave a kind of a grin, went to the bedroom door, opened up the door, looked back at me, and said, good night, Greg. He didn't call me son. And immediately inside of me, it broke my heart. I wanted to scream out, wait, Dad, come back. I can't lose you. Go ahead and do what you want to do. I'll do anything you want me to do to you 10 times better than I ever have. Come on back. I almost wanted to say that I didn't, but when he called me by my first name, I lost my dad in my mind. And for me to be mid-teenage years, to lose my father was horrific to me. That was worse than any other abuse that I'd ever gone through. He never called me son again from that point on. And I remember a few times after that, me not feeling loved anymore. Now go figure that. I don't even know how that plays out in a man's mind or a young boy's mind, but that really disturbed me. But later on in life, I still wanted my father to be part of that, a part of my life. I'd never talked to him about it until he was on his deathbed. And when he was dying in a coma, I told him everything that he had done to me, and that's in the book, and I won't go into all that. But there is a power of a son needing his father. And go ahead, Shrub.
I think that's just so true, because what I have witnessed in my 40 years of being in the education system is that whomever the child doesn't identify with the safer parent.
No.
Because safer parent is like, you'll be there forever. I can do anything and you'll be there. I'm fine. But I want the love and the approval of the parent that in some way they feel rejected by. And so it's almost as if the parent that is abusing has manipulated or brainwashed the child so that the child seeks their love and approval more, and it becomes more important to them. And it can take years, if ever, for that child to wake up and realize the one that really loved me was the safe parent and not the one who I sacrificed everything for their love and approval.
That's exactly right. That is right on the money.
Well, is there anything I can do about it? Because I made overtures and for a long time, and then I just quit. And he just really mean. He became mean like his father, and he was the sweetest person. We were really close, and he was sweet as everything. And then he was married to this not very nice woman, and they got divorced, and they had two children, and hadn't let me see the children the last 7 years either.
You know what I would recommend, Virginia? Number one, he is capable of having a mother and a father. And I think if you take dad completely out of the picture in your mind and never talk bad about him again to your son, and well, just say...
Well, I never did speak bad, but see, my son doesn't even speak to me for 7 years, I'm saying.
Yeah,
he hasn't spoken to me.
I think you need to reach out. There's always hope. I would reach out, make an attempt of saying, you know, I love you. I care. I really want to have a relationship with you.
You know,
can we try?
Well, actually, I did. When his dad died in March, I wrote him a long letter. And at the very end, I told him that I loved him and that I was proud that he was my son. Mm-hmm. And
that's as much as
anyway,
you can
and I hadn't heard from him.
Virginia, there's something that's called duty. And it's something that we do as parents besides loving our kids. We have a duty to them. It's like when we agree to have a child, we're taking on a duty to make sure that we're the best mothers ever. And with you still caring, it shows that you understand that on some level and that you want to do that. And so it surprises me how often with people call in with the names and we're comparing the names, it surprises me how many children refuse to talk to the good parent, you know, the parent that care really love the most. And yet they're so seeking and manipulated by the other. And what I can say is that for your own peace of mind, that it's very important that you do what I want to call your duty. And if you look at all the religious texts, all the main ones, they always talk about duty. So your duty as a mom, most of it ended when your child became an adult. However, for you to always have peace with yourself, if you every birthday you send a birthday gift and a birthday card, every holiday that you've celebrated when they were young, you send a Christmas card or a Hanukkah card or a whatever card from whatever's being celebrated and stuff. And then you always send a gift and a card for the children, whether they get it.
I always have done the children, but he asked me not to send him one.
Well, you know what? I would send him one anyway and just sign your name and say thinking of you and sign your name.
Okay.
And it just lets him know that you haven't cut him off. And I would just say thinking of you, happy birthday, love mom. And that's all. So it's not much of an intrusion. It just reminds him that you're always there and you haven't given up on him. And I think that's so important. And I feel doubly strong about that because one of the last things my dad said to me was, thank you for not giving up on me.
Mm. Right.
And he has been rewired by his father. Mentally and emotionally, they groom them from a young age and it lasts a lifetime. And
he's almost 50.
Yeah. Until he gets help or deals with his own pain of what's really happened, he may take it to the grave with him. And I pray that he doesn't, but you know, it's not his fault. He's just a victim of abuse that's rewired his brain.
Yeah, right. I guess I was confused about, you know, sending him the card when he asked me not to. So it's like,
I still would. It's your duty as mom. It's your duty to show him that your love is stronger than his request of no.
Yeah, and it gives him a justification if you don't.
Okay.
And of justifying, well, you wasn't the mom. You haven't sent a card, even though he asked you not to. You don't want to give him that tool or that bullet for his emotional gun to shoot back at you.
I've always done it with the children. You know, I continue to do Christmas and birthdays with them. But okay, great. Well, I will do that. His birthday's coming up. It's September 5th, so
this
is perfect timing.
Yeah, can I know his first name for just a moment, Virginia?
His name is Zeba, Z-E-B-A.
Ooh.
Okay, so in that name, does he have the first initial of the last name same as yours?
No, well, no, because I was married his father, Solomon, and he changed his last name from Solomon to Santiago. And I'm the one who changed my name from Shoshi. He used to call me Shoshi, and I changed it back to Virginia. So
yeah,
I left
I'm glad you
Oh, yeah, me too. And so I just use my middle name, which I've used when teaching and all, is Greg, G-R-E-G-G, like Gregory there. And his middle name is Greg, Zeba's is, but he So now he's Ziba Santiago, and I just went back to Virginia Craig. I mean, I thought Solomon was real pretty, but it wasn't my name, so I didn't take it back.
Right. So I just want to say that in his name, he has that one of the things he's here to learn is how to control his emotions or how to make his emotions work for him and to really experience the gamut of emotions. It's one of the things he's here to learn, but it's also in his name that he's going to do it his way. It's like
the Z, right? I have your book, right? And I know that I knew you said that about the Z, that they did it exactly their way.
They do it exactly their way. And he's learning how to be competitive. He's learning how to be a better version of himself. That's in his name also. So, you know what? I just look at it as parents whose children decide not to talk to him or whose parents decide not to talk to him for whatever reason is to hang your head high, do your duty toward them, and then go on with your life and make it right. The best life you can live.
Right.
Well, I'm very content. I got over it. I mean, not totally, but, you know, mostly, 99%. And I have a great life and everything, and that's, you know, fine. But it is kind of lonesome without him. He's my only child and, you know, not being able to see the children. So that kind of, you know, twangs every now and then in the old heart chakra there.
Well, what I don't think your son realizes, and every other child that's not talking with the safe parent, is that they are literally depriving their own children of having a loving presence in their life.
Yes.
Their children will think about that when they're older.
Yeah.
They won't blame the grandma because you always showed up on all the occasions, you know, with a gift or a whatnot or a card. So you were still, they knew that you were still thinking of them, but they will hold that against their parent.
And that's what's so sad. I know because, okay, yeah, because I know that, and I know that will happen. But I never really talked too badly about his father. I mean, he knew we didn't get along, but I didn't berate him or anything. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I carried him to see his father for the first 5 years because his father, when we got divorced, his father wouldn't pick him up. So then when I remarried, I told him he had to come get him, and then I'd take him halfway, you know. But then I felt terrible about having put him in the abuser's court, and yet how do you keep a child from their parent? Then he would have hated me.
Yeah.
You know what? It sounds like a catch 22 almost, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So you do the best you can do.
Yeah. I'm so appreciative. Thank you so much. And yeah, great. And I will for sure get your book, and I appreciate everything that I've heard tonight. It's just wonderful.
Thank you, Virginia.
Now hang up.
Appreciate
so
you.
Somebody, yeah, somebody might can get on.
May I suggest also the books that you recommended, Gregory, the I Can Do series with the first one is My Body's Mine. There's a book series for your grandchildren that's called it's called the I Can Do series, and the first the first book in the series, right now there's three in the series, is My Body's Mine. And they're written for kids. And, I mean, after the last time I spoke with Gregory, I literally ordered them for my grandchildren.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, great. Okay, and I'll send them on down.
Yeah, so, and they're not expensive. So, anyway, I want to thank you, Virginia, for calling in. And this is Dr. Gregory Williams has been our guest. And his website, again, is shatteredbythedarkness.com, which is the title of his book. And as always, Gregory, you're just a great guest, and thank you so much for joining me. And it looks like we are signing off. That time has gone incredibly fast. Again, if you didn't get a chance to call in and you'd like to contact us, our contact information is on knowthename.com. Just go to today's date, go to the interview show, or the call-in show is what I call it, and go to that show, and all the information on how to get a hold of Dr. Gregory Williams is right there, both his cell phone, if you want to call him, and his website. So thanks again, and thank you for listening. This is Sharon Lynn Wyeth signing off.